Hi everyone, my name is Shona Lane. I'm Education Officer here at the Western Plains Cultural Centre.
Case of false advertising, because Shona's not here. She's had to, she's missed out on this podcast. And it's only taken us 20 minutes to work out how to use the computer so far. So a good thing. Andrew Glassop here, Manager of Western Plains Cultural Centre. I have with me Carolyn Edwards, the Assistant Curator.
Hello.
I've got Kent Buchanan, the Curator.
Hello.
And Jessica Moore, the Collections Officer.
Good afternoon.
Okay, we're going to go to a museum focus this time, and we're looking at Lachlan Macquarie, the Governor, currently on display at the Western Plains Cultural Centre in the museum space. 1810 to 1821, monikered, nicknamed Father of a Nation. We're going to be looking at what does it mean to be the Father of a Nation? Where does this concept come from? Is it relevant or even necessary in modern day Australia? Okay, let's throw the question out there. Is Lachlan Macquarie worthy of Australia's Father of a Nation title? Discuss.
Well, the notion of Father of a Nation is a patriarchal construct, which implies that we need a father, or a mother for that matter. I think it's probably natural for everyone to look towards some kind of founding father or leading light. And Macquarie certainly fits the bill in some respects in terms of being an important part of that establishment of Australia as a country, I suppose.
It's funny that he's going to be called the Father of Australia when, I mean, the continent was named Australia during his tenure, but certainly we were never... He left us as separate colonies and never imagined, I think, that one day they'd all be together and, you know, that sort of thing. So that's quite interesting. I'm not sure that it is natural. I think it's natural for some countries. I think if you look at, say, England, for example, there are many, for want of a better word, great people in English history, but they don't seem to be hankering after the idea of a father. And even the term, I think, hankering leads me to the country where it does come from, which is the USA, which, of course, has the founding fathers. And I think that the push to have a father of Australia comes from, I don't know if you're going to use the word patriarchal, I'm going to use the word slavish sort of following of whatever happens in the USA.
See, I would probably argue completely the opposite, in that I think a country like Australia... in which people have come or forced to come here without any family relations, often as individuals, or immigrants who've had to leave their families behind, that actually when you come to a country like Australia, you innate kind of, there is a desperate need to find somebody who binds us together, who provides that shaping force which we can look to as some kind of, Not necessarily a father figure, but a guiding light or somebody who we can say defines the particular character of the place that you've come to. And I think Macquarie probably begins that process. I don't think he's the only person that we look to, but I think he's certainly the first person to really acknowledge that Australia has a potential. Australia is not just an administrative jail centre that will close down eventually, that actually has something to offer the world as a potential country.
I suppose it comes down to the systems that we put in place where ultimately there's one person in charge and that person is responsible for pulling everything together and forming the country, I suppose. That's where that desire comes from.
I think it speaks more about our contemporary society and our yearning for... you know, a leader or a mythical man at the head of it, because I don't think that's what Lachlan Macquarie intended himself to be. And from the reading I was doing this morning, he tendered his resignation 3 times before it was accepted. And he was on a path of naming things after himself. And he did provide the footprint for emancipation. And that's a really important thing that he's left the country, but I'm a little bit uneasy with Father of the Nation, and I don't particularly feel a very strong drive to find a Mother of a Nation either.
Perhaps Brother of the Nation. Family
of the Nation.
Look, I don't know whether to say I'm rather disturbed by Jessica's pronouncement that she has, you know, I was going to call you token female, but you've got...
You're outnumbered. I know.
We're currently outnumbered and always are in this organisation. But I find the idea that even if we need a father, that Lachlan Macquarie is the one, to be quite strange. I mean, because if you look at the idea that this was going to be a place for a prison, I mean, the original documents that came out with the First Fleet with Philip proved that to be wrong, that there were going to be laws and there was going to be a free society. The behaviour of people like, you know, when I was a schoolboy, the hero, the father of the nation was John MacArthur, you know, the wool man and the man with a, you know, professional sheep fancier. He was the father of the nation. And, you know, so there were people well before Macquarie who were looking at this place as a new society, a place where, you know, fortunes could be made, won, found, lost, and so on. And I think, you know, Lachlan Macquarie helped that to take place. You know, his freeing up of the emancipists and the ex-convicts was already taking place. Simeon Lord, you know, famous, who became a magistrate under Macquarie, had already proved himself. By 1806, he was whaling and doing all sorts of sort of high finance business as an entrepreneur. And that's well before Macquarie ever came out.
But I think that if we were to make judgments about historical beginnings based purely on dry fact and not on the development of mythology and the development of character and the development of symbol...
Dry fact...
Let me finish.
Okay, sorry.
Development of symbol and story and myth, then a lot of people from history we would not talk about anymore, because really, they weren't actually the people that did it. It was the boffins in the, you know, clerk's office who were actually doing all the kind of stuff that gets laws made and gets, you know, decisions approved. But we don't. We go for figureheads. We go for symbolic people who come to not necessarily be the person who start something or finish something, but become representative of it. And I think that in a young colony trying to work out where it fits and what it means and what directions it's going to go into, that's where you start to get these people kind of rising to the surface.
Indeed. Well, what would be then, I suppose, moving on from that part, but it's all connected, I suppose, is the sense of history as a narrative. It's usually written and is read as a narrative. And you could argue, and I would probably argue, that it's more understandable when you write it as a narrative, as a story. But stories, you know, in the literary tradition, they need protagonists. They need climaxes. They need obstacles that must be overcome. And, you know, you need the hero or the anti-hero of the story. Is this just our, not only our fascination with the narrative, that we need to find a hero?
Well, I think so, and I think it's also just there needs to be either someone to blame or someone to celebrate. In much the same way that, you know, a prime minister will be, you know, given the blame for whatever the state the country's in, or be celebrated as the person who's, you know, seen the country prosper. We all understand that it can't be just one person, but they're handy, you know, figureheads are handy.
I don't know that
handy.
It's just handiness. I think it comes from a kind of...
it's just handy.
a simpler thing within human civilization, that it looks to heroes and villains, it looks to black and white, it looks to...
Absolutely, that's why there's monarchy. That's...
Exactly, you know, the structures and that kind of, you know, as Andrew said, that kind of narrative where somebody arrives, does something, changes something, leaves, that kind of, you know, the role of the narrative in all history and kind of shifting the way we understand history, I think, is pretty strong. And pretty much, I think, why someone like Lachlan Macquarie has risen to the surface is that he fits that idea we have of what we expect from an early
leader
of the country. Mm. What characteristics we would expect somebody like that to have. Not characteristics that would have been particularly appropriate to the age, perhaps not, you know, and that again is another reason why we look back at him from a modern perspective and go, he was enlightened, he was a leader, he was someone we should look to, because he wasn't like MacArthur, he wasn't that sort of self-interest thing, it was not as strong.
And it's a neat, clean story.
Exactly.
And, you know, yeah, he came, he led the country well, the colony well, he left, and it is a compact narrative, and it explains a lot about why our sort of white history has written over the oral history of Aboriginal cultures, which didn't have any the conventional narrative constructions that we understand them, and for so long it was silenced.
Mm.
See, I don't know that he was so much that he's risen to the surface as so much as pushed, I think, more than anything else. I don't think, you know, he ended, as Carolyn said, you know, he tried to tender his resignation three times before he could finally get out of the joint. He was appointed. He didn't sort of crusade to become the leader of a great free nation, you know, south of the equator. Mm. His early military life, he joined up the year, I think, after the beginning of the American Civil War, the American War of Revolution, and went and fought for the British against what you might call the, you know, freedom-loving Yankees. He then went down to India and with the EIC, hardly the most enlightened of corporations the world has ever seen, and joined in with their particular battles. Okay, I mean, you know, he was a member of the military, and that's what they did at the time. But certainly, I think claims that he was, you know, this great sort of believer in human justice and so on, I think, are wildly overstated.
Yeah. I mean, he was
by his supporters in order to bring him up as this father to satisfy the need, because, you know, if you look back at, you know, great people who changed history, you can always find someone to, you know, say, oh, this one's probably more important, you know.
But you say that he was brought up by his supporters to fill a need. The fact that need exists anyway, the fact that somebody feels, whoever they are, whether it's a museum curator or an archivist or a member of the public, the fact that they feel that there's a hole in Australian history that needs to be filled by a father figure, if you want to use, I think shows that that is something that we want and we need and we like to have as part of our historical narrative.
Mm.
I want to lie on the couch and eat corn chips, but I don't need to. I think, look, I don't think that there is a need. I think that, you know, the advances in history, you know, from, you go back to, you know, the early Marxist historians who completely did away with that great man of history and went simply through, no, it's simply economics and class. That's what history is through the whole time. And then through other, you know, you go through other feminist history or postmodern history or, African, Afrocentric history, whatever you want to do. I mean, for us to all of a sudden go, oh, no, you know, we need a father, we must have a father, it strikes me as a very peculiar claim.
Well, considering he did try to tender his resignation, I mean, that's a father that's trying to leave the family.
Should we be
a deadbeat dad?
And possibly he was an absent father for, you know, a fair while. Because in hindsight, we're looking back and saying, well, yes, he was the father of the nation, because he put things in process that would then lead to federation or whatever, but that of course is only looking back.
But how much of Macquarie's, you know, push to the surface or whatever, is based on Macquarie, or is it part of a bigger trend in Australian history that is looking more positively back to those first 50 years of our history, that it's not it's seeing it as being independent from England and seeing it being independent from people like MacArthur and starting to look at it in terms of...
structured, organised.
Yeah, that actually going back to those first periods and trying to not go with what traditionally has been the history and starting to look at what potentially other people were bringing to the colony. And potentially Macquarie is one of the people who has sort of stuck out during that process.
May well be. Well, look, let's imagine that we all agree that Lachlan Macquarie should be the father of the nation.
Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. What is it? Oh, yes, very good. What would be the effect if we did actually have this idea that there was a father and we lauded through the school curriculum and through humble exhibitions such as the one that we've got on here that Lachlan Macquarie is the father? What is our father? The father of Australia. What would be the impact of that? Would it make any difference?
Not now, it's too late. We already have our heroes and villains and...
But if he was put up as the defining hero, if it was actually, if the push became so overwhelming and our need was so urgent that we said, yes, we must have this father.
So you
like
mean
the Howard government tried to do with Edmund Barton.
Who?
So you see it as this idea of a myth that would replace the Anzac.
Well, see, that's why I find the whole thing is rather curious, in that we're going to put forward Lachlan Macquarie as the father of the nation, when quite clearly, you know, we were born in 1915. That's the other myth, and in which case, you know, there's 96 years of gestation, or, you know, sort of building up to that great moment of when, from father to thing, and so there's a bit of a, there's something strange going on there. But look, no, I think that if we do take on this father image, and myth is important, and I mean, and history is important because it helps to either create or to destroy the myths of who we are and how we came about. If he was the father and it was accepted and it was taught as the father, I would be extremely anxious for the way in which that would impact, because he is a white foreign man in a country which is no longer white. I'm not quite sure if you could call it still foreign, but there's a lot of, you know, there's, well, and is no longer a man. It, you know, it's, well, you know what I mean? I mean, it's prescribing fatherhood to such a narrow band of Australian society now that I fear what the impact would be.
I think, I mean, in some ways I think that it is, that the push for a father, and in this case Macquarie, comes from a desire to look back at our rather complicated past and try to glean a kind of neat narrative that did fit into a canonic narrative that maybe isn't true, and maybe as a country we need to embrace the diversity in the way that the country grew and developed. I think, again, in hindsight, we can look at MacArthur and go, oh, he did this, 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 and this. That means, that equals that he's the father, when he may not have known what he was doing.
I think
maybe
the
that was
problem sort of... is, though, when you start picking away the thread of Macquarie as being someone of importance, you start to realise that every single one of Australia's historical characters, events, symbols, moments, white, male, Anglo-Saxon, Christian, pretty much all of them, bushrangers, diggers, Eureka Stockade, trade union movement, all these really significant Australian, typically Australian historical characters are all of that same vein. And so you really start to... If Macquarie is no longer legitimate as a figurehead, why is Gallipoli legitimate as a figurehead? Why is Ned Kelly legitimate as a figurehead?
Because he was Irish.
Well, Macquarie was Scottish, so he wasn't as...
I know, the trade union movement is technically Scottish as well, but...
Well, please. So it's this kind of... By kind of criticising Macquarie, you start to pull apart a lot of Australian history. and you start to realise that actually Australian history is very undiverse in terms of, oh, I mean, the history is diverse, but the people and the events and the characters that we quite often celebrate are not necessarily that diverse or reflective of the diversity within Australia.
Even more than the need for us to reject, I think, the idea. You know, I don't think that we do any service to Macquarie by saying that he's the father of the nation, because I think it tends to diminish his actual achievements. If you just go that he's this great mythical figure, oh, isn't he fabulous?
Yeah.
Then you don't really understand, you know, what he was doing. I think he starts to fall into some sort of legendary status.
Yes.
But, you know, wouldn't it be better to say, taking point, you know, the crossing of the Blue Mountains and the exploration of, you know, the Central West, where we live, by Oxley. Macquarie signed the paper to tell Oxley to do that, or to tell, you know, Blackstone Lawson to do that. But the push for it came from pastoralists.
Yeah.
And the people who actually put it, who actually dug the road, were convicts.
Yeah.
And possibly the people that showed them how to get there were the Aborigines. And I think, you know, if we start saying, oh, it was Macquarie did it, then we're losing so much detail and so much of that diversity of what you spoke.
It's true. I mean, it sounds ridiculous to say, but our history is a kind of post-modern history compared to the rest of the world, in the sense that we're such a young country that maybe we're desperately trying to give it that mythical kind of narrative that older countries have, when in actual fact our history is non-linear. And like you say, the desire or the push comes from disparate groups rather than one figurehead.
I would think so. Now, look, the last question that Shona, in her absence, she sent us a list of questions, is who else might have a stronger claim to the title? Okay, I want you to give a name and 10 seconds on why.
I think you should start, Andrew. You seem to be so anti-Macquarie. Who would you replace him with?
I'll go with Ned Kelly. Okay, mainly because he wasn't ginger, but he was Irish. It's close enough. And a glorious failure. And I think that a lot of our country's history has been a glorious failure of the small man against the big man.
That's a lot of pressure to come up with this idea of a father of a nation.
Email was sent a week ago, Jessica.
Oh, no. Look, I'm sorry, I'm just going to have to say I don't think we should have a father or a mother of this country, so I'm just going to hand it over to Kent.
Oh, that is a really hard question. I mean, the notion of nationhood is always evolving, and, was Macquarie the father of a particular kind of nation that we think we are? Is Whitlam, you know, the father of the kind of nation that we became and are trying to abolish or bring back or live up to? I would have to take a rain check on that.
See, I like Macquarie. I like him as the father of the nation.
There we go.
So Jessica likes patriarchy.
Jessica has an opinion, and I think, you know, two other members might have learned.
I think that if we were to look back at history and judge people based on the time in which they lived, what they did, and what they set up that impacts in the future, I think Macquarie, comes out of it looking pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so... Second, what's on at the WPCC? First of all, if you want to hear more about Macquarie and you're in the immediate area, or I think plane trips are only $150 from Sydney. Thursday lunchbox at 1 p.m. I'm going to be basically talking about Macquarie. So touching on some of the things that we've been looking at here about his impact on the country, what it actually was. And if we did have a father, what would it mean? And I'll be looking a lot more at possibly the American model.
So what have we got coming up? Art Express is ending up soon, 4th of September. So if you haven't come down to marvel at teenage creativity, then come along to that. And replacing Art Express in the main space, we have Tracy Moffat Narratives. It's quite pertinent after we've been speaking about narratives of the country. That's going to be an amazing exhibition. Really, so that weekend I want all photography lovers to put it in their diary. Friday the 9th of September at 6 p.m. that will be opening, along with Julia Burns in the new media space. And the following day, on Saturday the 10th of September at 2 p.m, we have the next installment of the regional art space. There's a photographer from Lithgow, Julie Williams, who will be opening her show. She's created a document of her pilgrimage to a waterhole in Lithgow, and it's going to be a beautiful show, so come along to that.
Is this the first time we've had photography in the regional art space?
No. No, we had an artist from Bathurst a couple of years ago.
More than three.
Yeah, yes. It's the first time in a long time.
Okay, well, that'll be good. That'll be interesting.
Yeah. For those that haven't checked out Operation Art, it's still on display in the Children's Gallery. And Leanne Watt will be continuing to be displayed in the regional art space until Julie Williams' show. And in the project space is an exhibition of the work of Juan Ford, who is a Melbourne-based painter. And that show is well worth a look.
And from collections, I just wanted to spruik the collections online. We now have all of the gallery collection available to view online, and the museum collection will, the entire museum collection will be up in about 2 or 3 days' time. So it's really worth having a look at some of the objects that we have in the collection.
Very good. Okay, so final segment, 4 minutes of interest, current issues, controversy, anything that's caught your eyes in the swirling miasma.
Well, I suppose for me, speaking of hagiography,
hang on.
I think tomorrow...
Patriarchy? Canonical? What? Anyway.
Tomorrow we're seeing the memorial service for the recently departed painter...
Margaret Olley.
Who is being... promoted as, in some respects, the mother of Australian art, which is probably a good example of, you know, a desire for to place someone in that position, but the reality of which is a lot more complicated. Certainly, Margaret Olley made a significant contribution to the world of art, but I would argue not through her own art, predominantly through her acts of kindness to public collections, etc. And certainly as a mentor to a lot of artists. I don't know that her painting has really made the impact that a lot of other artists of her generation have made.
I think she's been celebrated primarily for what she represents rather than what she actually physically produced. She's someone who's certainly an archetypal artist in terms of her character and her personality and the way she lived her life. And she also is one of the last connections that we have to the kind of glory days of Australian art, you know, in the late 40s, early 50s. So I think that her legacy is the fact that she is a connection back to a time when we kind of talk about Australian art being controversial and shocking and interesting and confrontational, more than necessarily her art being transformative of the Australian art world in any way.
That's right. I think that certainly if you've sort of read the Sydney Morning Herald and the way that she has been idealised in a sense, the kind of eccentric old batty lady who lived in a tiny little house in Paddington, and it was piled with detritus and rubbish and paintings and books, etc., fits very much into that idea of, you know,
bohemian
artist.
Yeah.
But to my mind, it's more about her personality and her position than her art.
Most Australians, that even includes a lot of Australians who work and are involved in culture, would be hard pressed to name a single work by her.
By her, I mean, essentially, you would think of the portrait of her by.
Dobell.
Thank you.
The portrait of
by Dobell of her is something that comes to mind, but I agree. I don't know that too many people would be familiar with her work, which are essentially still lives and of a very kind of antiquated
They have their own aesthetic beauty, but they're certainly not...
groundbreaking.
No.
But isn't that perfect as the mother figure then? She's sort of sacrificed her own, whether she's meant to or not, her own legacy for other people's advancement.
Sure, I mean, I think there's, you know, she's certainly become a kind of a raconteur while she was alive, in a similar way to Bob Ellis or other characters who are kind of asked questions about, you know, particular subject matter.
Because no one could think of anyone else.
But certainly, you know, she's a great loss to the art world. And I suppose my reasons for bringing her up is so that we can talk about why she's a great loss to the art world.
So there we have it then. Lachlan Macquarie, Irrelevant Scott, Margaret Olley, Batty Old Lady. If that doesn't get the emails flooding in, yeah, please, comments to kent.buchanan. Don't use double. No, if you would like to email us with a comment or a suggestion, it's info@wpccdubbo.org.au. Check out the website, wpccdubbo.org.au, or we're on Facebook just under, I think, wpccdubbo. Yeah. So it's pretty easy to think. Thank you very much. I've been joined today by Carolyn.
Goodbye.
Kent.
Thank you.
And Jessica.
Thank you.
And this show has been produced for the first time by Jenna Thompson.
Yay, who
doesn't wish to talk, but we might bring her in next time. So we'll see you in a